Hi, this is Dan Rusinowski, the voice of the San Jose Sharks. You're listening to Bay Area Sports Wrap with Lowell, Marco, and Ryan. Puck came out, but Erik Karlsson intercepts. Moves across the line, lead. Barkley Goodrow gets around the defense, shoots, he scores! Barkley Goodrow is the hero for the Sharks in overtime in Game 7. The Sharks were down by 3 goals. They came back, they took the lead, and then after Vegas tied it, Barkley Goodrow is the big man on campus. Sharks win 5-4, and they win the series in 7.
Unbelievable!
All right, welcome to a very special Bay Area Sports Wrap interview, along with Ryan Leong, Lowell Tuckman behind the camera tonight. I'm Marco Yakovlevich, and sitting in the middle with us is the longtime broadcaster, the radio voice of the San Jose Sharks, Dan Rusinowski, who also happens to be this year's recipient of the 2023 Foster Hewitt Memorial Award. Now, this award is presented to broadcasters who make outstanding contributions not only to their profession but to the game of hockey itself. And Dan has been the recipient this year. He was voted by the NHL Broadcasters Association, excuse me. And it's an honor to have him here to talk about that moment and about his career as a broadcaster with the Sharks. So, Dan, first of all, congratulations and thanks for joining us here on Bay Area Sports Wrap.
Well, it's great to be here, and it's such an honor what I've been living through the last couple of months, really, when I first found out about being the recipient of this year's award. It comes with a tremendous responsibility, of course, that you have to live up to. This is not presented to people at the end of their careers. This is presented to people who are in their careers, usually, and they do it posthumously occasionally or after somebody has retired, but in recent years, it's been more that way, and I have to say that I'm so honored, and I was so flattered, and I was so jazzed up and proud and all those other emotions to feel when the news came out, and that was just before the schedule came out. And of course, then it was waiting for a while to see what the plans were like, and what an amazing first-class experience it was at the Hall of Fame. First of all, to have the luncheon and to be presented the Foster Hewitt Memorial Award. And Mark Mulvoy got the Elmer Ferguson Award for excellence in writing. He's an outstanding writer for many, many seasons. And I really got a chance to meet him and spend time with him. And that was awfully special. And so the entire experience was incredible. And then, of course, it got capped off by the team having a special night for me here at SAP Center the day after Thanksgiving against Montreal. What better team to have it against? The team that's won more Stanley Cups than any other. And that was a special time, too, for me and for my wife and for my family. And I just can't thank everybody enough for all the great well wishes, emails, notes on the web, telephone calls, and from people in the profession and outside of it, from the fan base. It's been marvelous.
And when you get to Toronto, can you just like take us through your emotions seeing your plaque up there along the wall with all the other greats that have won this award distinctively?
Well, so you certainly do a double take when it happens and you see it up there, and they did such a classy job in making it look good, and I appreciate everything they wrote. They did everything beautifully, and I wanted to spend a couple of minutes with it by myself, actually. There were, you know, my whole group was there. The day before the actual induction event took place, and we were all there, and the plaque was up, and we all took pictures with it. But once everybody sort of dispersed, I just went over there and spent a little time with it by myself and reflected on a lot of different experiences in life over the years with broadcasting, with the game of hockey, and it felt special.
Hey, Dan, Ryan Leong, and thanks again for joining us here on Bay Area Sports Wrap. I'm sure you're just thrilled the fact that you become synonymous with the team, and you don't see that much with broadcasters anymore, but I would say that, you know, you're in that class of a Vin Scully or a John Miller, and of course I'm talking baseball here, or Mike Lang, hockey, with the Pittsburgh Penguins. Was that always a goal of yours to, like, you know, be a part of the game of hockey and contribute to it the way you have?
Yes, I'd say so. I moved to San Jose to make it my home. I wanted it to be the place where I lived and where I settled, and as it turned out, my life changed. I met my wife here. I set up my home here, and I've been very fortunate to be able to be with the Sharks for all these years. And let's not forget, it's a privilege to be in the NHL, and it's You got to have a lot of support from a great organization, which I've always had, and that's something that's exceedingly special. But I did come here to be part of something special, to bring hockey back to the Bay Area, where it had been for many years, and to do that at the NHL level, and to get my first opportunity to broadcast games at the highest level. And it's been an absolute thrill. I've enjoyed every second of it.
Just wanted to, I'm sure you could give us endless hours of counting your best moments, career moments, but if you had to think of a couple of just career highlights, what would those be for you?
Well, the first game, obviously, was the first game in Sharks history, and as some people know, it was not on television in the Bay Area, so the only actual Sharks broadcast recording that we have is my call with Dennis Hull at the old Pacific Coliseum in Vancouver on that October the 4th date in 1991. That was a big thrill to be able to actually broadcast a real NHL game. And so that's one of them. You know, the usual ones you would expect. Beyond that, I'd say that, you know, Jamie Baker's goal against Detroit, Game 7, what an amazing playoff series that was. The next year, Ray Whitney in Game 7 against Calgary. That's the one a lot of people forget. Jonas Donskoy in the Stanley Cup Final. All these trips to the conference final over the years. But those are all the good things. But I even appreciate some of the things that weren't so good for the Sharks, like the night that they went to Calgary and took a 1-0 lead and lost 13-1. Or another night when they were losing 12-1 to Colorado, the night that Patrick Roy was acquired by Colorado. Everybody in the Avalanche knew something was up. Nobody else did, at least on our side. They were up 12-1 with 10 seconds to go in the third period. And wouldn't you know it, the Sharks get a penalty shot with 10 seconds left to make it 12-2. As if that really mattered. So we've had moments like that too. You know, the reverse sweep against Los Angeles, that was a big disappointment here, but it's certainly something that we were part of. And you know, let's get right to it. Everybody is dreaming about the Stanley Cup coming to San Jose and having the Sharks' names on it, and certainly I'm one of those. But the fact that it was handed out here at SAP Center when people said that would never happen, it was really a special moment for the game. Not so much for Sharks fans because of the disappointment, but you know, everybody I talked about that stayed there felt the disappointment of the Sharks losing the Stanley Cup Final, but also felt the joy and the pride in seeing that trophy handed out, which is just a beautiful thing every time it's handed out.
You know, Dan, growing up here, we've been blessed to have really good radio broadcasters over the years. You know, a couple names come to my mind: Bill King, Hank Greenwald, and Greg Papa. Those were the guys that got me wanting to be a sports broadcaster, a play-by-play guy. And I definitely have to include you now on this list, because growing up, we didn't have hockey here in California, at least not in the Bay Area. You know, the only thing I knew about hockey growing up as a kid was the 1980 Miracle on Ice team and Wayne Gretzky. That was it. So for this first 2 years, I learned hockey by listening to you broadcast these games, knowing the tangents, these intricacies of the game that I had no idea about, what calls, you know, as far as, you know, what to say during a game, because it's something that I was always been passionate about. So I think you're definitely included in one of the great broadcasters here in the Bay Area. And I just want to know, how have you seen this city evolve with the hockey and the Sharks team since you first came here in 1991, now here in 2023?
Well, first of all, Marco, it's a great compliment. I happen to know all of those three guys, and of course, Bill King is no longer with us, Hank Greenwald no longer with us. They were very kind to me when I first came here. I spent a little bit more time with Bill than I did with Hank, but every time I saw Hank and now his son Doug on the road somewhere, we always have good memories. And it was so special to be included in that. And Greg Papa actually was the person who introduced me to the Bay Area, because the A's had a game. He was broadcasting A's games on TV at the time on cable. And they brought me over there to introduce me, and we had a chat. It was me, Greg Papa, and Reggie Jackson. Now that's a name for you. And it was very interesting to see Reggie's personality away from the baseball field. It was the first time I'd actually met him in person, so that was really something. But back to the next part of your question, and that is the evolution of San Jose into a hockey city. I think the first thing that I'll tell you is that when I first got here from the East Coast, I knew about San Jose. I had been to the Bay Area before, but I had never lived there. And when we would travel around that first year, everybody wanted to look at the new San Jose Sharks, like welcoming a new baby into the family. And They would ask questions like, is San Jose near San Diego? That would be one of the ones I would get. Or Kelly Kissio, oh, that's where he is. I thought he retired 5 years ago. You know, that kind of a thing. So there was a lot of misunderstanding about where San Jose is as a city and what it means to our economy. And, of course, it's the center of Silicon Valley, which is the economic engine of the world. So I think that the first thing that I noticed was how much more recognition that the hockey team brought the city. I think that was good. The fact that people associate teal, black, and white with the city of San Jose as much as they do the San Jose Sharks now, I think that's great. And, you know, that follows into line with a lot of the sports teams around. You know, you think of, you know, the Pittsburgh Penguins and Steelers colors for the city of Pittsburgh. You think of, you know, the Bruins colors and the Red Sox colors for Boston. So the same thing for San Jose. But this was the first time that one of the major sports leagues put its arms around the city of San Jose and not only said we're going to play in what we call the South Bay here, but we're going to actually have San Jose in the name. We're going to play in the city. We're going to play downtown. We're going to bring people downtown with this beautiful new arena that's getting constructed. And I think that it's done wonders for the image of the community, but it's also been another engine of bringing a lot of people from very differing backgrounds together. And I think that's another thing that sports teams generally do. I think that the San Jose Sharks have done as good a job as anybody to do that. And part of it is, you know, for good business reasons, obviously, because, you know, when I first moved here, I remember five generations of people that were born, raised, went to school, died in San Jose. And of course, what's happening now, the economic reality is that the kids of people that grew up here often can't afford to live here right away. So they end up moving somewhere else. And so I've seen a diaspora of people from San Jose who've grown up from the Sharks or with the Sharks. And now when we're on the road, we're seeing a lot more teal sweaters because of that. And, of course, getting fans of the team from all over the world through, you know, efforts like the 1991 club that we have, but also just because people have come to appreciate Sharks hockey for what it's been the last 20 years. And I know I'm saying this as the team is in a rebuilding phase, but that's really the history that we had. I think it's brought San Jose out into the open amongst the major league cities in America. And I think the team doesn't get enough credit for its role in doing that. And I really believe that there's a lot more years of that growth that's going to happen. And, I'll always remember that, that so many fans that were not from San Jose that would think that it would take 6 years to get here now come regularly from as many as an hour or two away. We have a lot of fans in the Central Valley that come over for games. And, you know, example, Walnut Creek Concord area, we have a lot of fans from that area and from the Tri-Valley area simply because, A, there's a great market of people who are have affinity for the sport, but B, also because you can get to San Jose from either side of the bay without crossing a bridge. And I think that that's an advantage. I say Marin is probably the only exception to that. But you can get from Walnut Creek to San Jose, just hop on 680. And at that time of the day, in the afternoon, you have a situation where people have either already come to San Jose to work, or if they're coming from that area, the traffic's going the other way. So, you know, there's a little bit of traffic everywhere now. But I would say that was an advantage that the team had. So then you had, you know, the people that supported the Seals in the beginning. Mm-hmm. They were huge Sharks fans at the Cow Palace, and many are still here. That was a big part of the base. And then there was this other group called South Bay Patriots that, that got back to that point I was making about the fact that it was the San Jose Sharks. It wasn't the San Francisco Sharks. It wasn't the Golden State Sharks. It was the San Jose Sharks. And so these were people that grew up around San Jose that said, you know, we're very proud of where we're from. We feel we're a major league city, but we feel we don't get recognized as that. And I remember when Gavin Newsom was mayor of San Francisco, he described San Jose as a suburb of San Francisco, which was kind of more of the old school thinking of San Francisco being the big city. But San Jose's bigger, right, and has Silicon Valley money, and everything is going on here. And San Francisco is still a wonderful, you know, a great city, but San Jose had enough of its own character, and hockey became a big part of that. You know, then the wins against Detroit and all of the success and all the great pride that the team brought. And now we have, you know, this huge facility where everybody is playing the game. It's going to continue to grow. We have, Sharks Ice in Oakland. We have it in San Jose. We have it in Fremont. And now there's talk of, obviously, of the expansion to Gilroy and maybe some other places where we're going to get more people actually playing the game of hockey. And then you flip that around back to what I was saying earlier about bringing people of very different backgrounds together. The combination of people, some people leaving the Bay Area and changing the demographic makeup of the community, we're attracting new people to this sport that don't know the game of hockey but are in the economic range of a Sharks hockey ticket holder. So, you know, we have an event like Diwali Night for the Indian community. I have some neighbors who are of Indian background. They came here from India. They didn't have any connection to the game of hockey. And they bought tickets to a game after we met, and they said, geez, wouldn't you know it, we picked this particular night. And they had a great time. Mm-hmm. So it's bringing people together and getting people on that same plane so they can sit and talk about their team. They can forget about some of maybe the differences that they have and make the community more whole. And so I think what we're doing is we're creating a whole generation of hockey fans that are growing up with the team again, but it's now the process of introducing them first to the game. And you know as well as I do that once you get introduced to this game, you come to a game, you fall in love with it. And that's what's happening again. And it's really kind of refreshing to see all of that going on as the years go by. And we've got lots more of that as the team continues.
Well, final question for me. You know, you talk about, you know, people getting into this game. I love the story about your uncle taking you to your first Rangers game when you were 10 years old and how that opened your eyes to this sport. And then the whole pre and listening to the post game shows that something that you wanted to do. So do you have a favorite childhood memory when going to the mecca of all arenas, Madison Square Garden? And one of the things that, you know, maybe stood out for you when you were going there and wanting to be a sports broadcaster yourself?
Well, don't forget, you don't get opportunities to go to a lot of NHL games. We're a little spoiled because, you know, I'm at all of them. But back then, you know, I only went to a handful of games over the course of many years. And my uncle that you mentioned, my mom's brother, worked for Exxon in Manhattan. And so they had some season seats, but the games against Boston and Detroit and Montreal were all taken. And so the game that he got was the Pittsburgh Penguins, which was at that time an expansion team. It's kind of funny, that very first game, Pete Stemkowski was playing for the Rangers. He'd later become my broadcast partner. In the game, Les Binkley got the start for Pittsburgh, and he got injured in the game, and so he was replaced by Jim Rutherford, who later became, you know, a general manager many times over in the NHL. And you go through that lineup, and there's so many different individuals that became so influential in the game. That was the very first game I went to, which, by the way, was a tie. They had ties back then. They had no overtime for those years. I remember particularly three other games, actually, I went to in those years, though, beyond that first one. They were all at the Garden. Another one was the first time that the Rangers played Boston after they lost to them in the Stanley Cup Final. And the Rangers won that game, as I remember, it was 7-1. They blew them out. It was very early in that campaign again. So it was interesting for me to see, you know, Eddie Johnston and Jerry Cheevers and Bobby Orr and you know, all of these great players go up against Brad Park and John Rattel and all of the great Rangers of that era. That was a memorable one. Then it was another game against Toronto where Eddie Jockeman picked up 2 assists in the game. And that was a Ranger record, and I'm not sure, it might have been an NHL record at the time, too, for most assists by a goalie in a game. Of course, that got broken in the 13-1 loss in Calgary when the Sharks lost that game because Jeff Reese had 3 assists in that game. That's a record that may never be broken. But, you know, that was a big thrill in those early years. And then here's another one that I don't talk about much. The NHL All-Star Game was at Madison Square Garden in 1973. And that was one of the games that my uncle had tickets to, and we went to the game. And so by that time, as you mentioned, when I was introduced to the game at that first Penguins game and to radio, it opened a magical world for me. The game came to life for me by the announcers I was listening to, and that's what I wanted to do. And so this particular game, I had listened to so many games of, you know, late at night, 10:30, the Rangers are on the road in Oakland playing the California Golden Seals, and I got to see Joey Johnston, and, you know, I saw a couple of players for the LA Kings. Rogie Vachon, I saw him play in that game in the All-Star game, and he was spectacular in that game. And, of course, you may remember it was more of a game back then than it is these days, which is more of a skills exhibition, but back then, they even had penalties in the All-Star game. But back then, these guys were trying to show that they were among the best. And that came from the tradition of the All-Star game originally being an All-Star group of players against the defending Stanley Cup champions. Okay. That's how it started. But then it became obvious that that wasn't going to work because the teams changed rosters just a little bit too much even then. So they went to the format that's more familiar now, although it was a full five-on-five hockey game, not three-on-three. So I went to that game, and here was one of the really crazy things that happened. Of course, the Rangers and the Bruins were arch rivals, and there still is a love-hate relationship, mostly hate between New York and Boston. But they had, they were playing in the final, and right. The Bruins had won, and the Rangers just couldn't beat Bobby Orr at the time. Well, they're introducing the members of the Bruins, and they're absolutely booing the crap out of them, and just going all over the place. And Bobby Orr came out, and he was the only one that really didn't get booed. Esposito got booed. He shook his fist at the crowd. Ken Hodge, all these guys getting booed like crazy by the fans at the Garden. But Bobby Orr came out, and there were a couple smatterings of boos, but it was more cheers because of how much respect everybody had for Bobby Orr. And he came out, and I don't know if you remember this, but, the ice at Madison Square Garden is pretty darn good these days. They've finally mastered the art of making ice in an arena that has a lot of changeovers, and which Madison Square Garden does. So we don't have this problem as much anymore, but the ice was kind of lousy back then. And Bobby Orr came out, and he went to stop at center ice when he was introduced, and his skate hit a rut in the ice, and he toppled right on his face.
Oh, wow.
And so think about it, the greatest player that I ever saw play, mm-hmm. with all due respect to Gretzky and Messier and the rest, Bobby Orr, topples to the ice and kind of embarrasses himself. And then he goes out and has an unbelievable game. So that particular game, I saw Brad Park and Bobby Orr play on the power play together. And, of course, that was something we were never going to see because they were always on different rosters. But these are the two best offensive defensemen of their era. And I got a chance to see that in person. So those are a couple of the early thrills that I had. And, of course, that translated over to when I went to broadcasting and started broadcasting college hockey. And then the American Hockey League, where a big thrill for me was to call the Calder Cup final between the New Haven Nighthawks, a team I worked for, and the Adirondack Red Wings, Detroit's affiliate. They had Joe Murphy, Adam Graves, et cetera, Bob Probert was on that team. And the way I describe it is the Nighthawks didn't have those players. But they had Rolly Melanson, the Nighthawks did, and they had a couple. Hubie McDonough was an excellent American League player, and a few others that played in the NHL. But that was basically it. But it was quite a run. And then, of course, that was the greatest run I ever had with a team until 2016, when the Sharks made the Stanley Cup Finals. So I've had a lot of great memories in the past. But as Artur Zerbe once said, every day that goes by is one day closer to the Sharks winning their first Stanley Cup. And I'm looking forward to being around and calling the action when that happens. And it's going to be a special day, as I said, not only for the team, for the organization, but also for the city of San Jose. And I think we'll have a nice coming out party again for people that are hockey fans everywhere. And the growth of the sport is tremendous. And the venue here is just a great place to see a game. So I think that Sharks hockey is a big part of this city and will be for a long time.
Last one for me, Dan. Thanks again for taking time to talk with us. I mean, it's obvious that your passion just flows through you. I mean, it just emanates from you. I mean, you relay stories to us from memories of your childhood, and you don't even flinch. It's like amazing how much detail you put into things. So that being said, what do you enjoy most about being an audio/radio broadcaster that you can do in your medium that you can't do with television?
Well, I still call it radio, although they're calling it audio these days because of the, in many respects, the lack of a transmitter. But I really think that it's important to note that just because that's the case in some cases, we still have a Sharks radio network, affiliate stations in Northern California. And, our main platform now is the Sharks Audio Network using the Sharks Plus SAP Center app or online or using satellite radio. But there are many more platforms with which to access the game. And the other thing is that it's fully digital, so the sound quality is great. And the transmitter, instead of being in a small area, is worldwide. Mm-hmm. I have people listening to games in Dubai and in Taiwan and in Europe, and they listen to games freely without any problem. So this is a big deal to expand the audience. And it's being done using modern technology, which I think is fantastic. So, and I think that It's the most intimate way that a young person can get attached to a team and really identify with the players. And that's the responsibility that I have. The part that I enjoy the most is painting that picture using words and descriptions and my writing style, which is obviously part of the narrative of the game. I'm actually telling a story, so I'm writing and editing as the game is going on. But that's only part of the story. And the part of it that makes it so intimate and such a close personal experience for people is the same one that I had way back in the 1970s when I was first listening to games. And that is that you take the basic essences and the stuff, the components that you're being provided by the broadcaster, the words, the excitement, the sounds of the crowd, all of that in the background, the effects, and you're creating the picture in your mind. So it's not complete until the listener completes the picture. And because it's in your mind and because it's a one-on-one thing, I could have 50,000 people listening, but I have 50,000 one-on-one relationships. And I'm the friend that's providing that picture for somebody. They're completing the picture. So it's very intimate, and it's very personal, and everybody has a different way of looking at it. So to me, that makes it more important, radio/audio, whether you want to call it either one, more important than ever, because that intimacy is something that this medium does better, I think, than television. I think that once you become a fan, obviously, you'd like to look at what you're seeing, or if you can't get to a game. And of course, all the games are on TV these days. Back when I was growing up, they weren't. But even with that, I think it the medium is more important than ever for all of the reasons that I said. And I think that if you're a young person, the other advantage I tell kids is that you can listen to a game and you can do your homework at the same time. If you're watching it on TV, you won't do your homework. So maybe your parents will be happier with you.
I can't thank you enough, Dan. I think Marco and myself and Lowell here, we just marvel at your dedication, your passion. I can think of so many other adjectives, but I already had a ton of respect for you, and it just went, I can't, exponentially higher. So I thank you. I think the city of San Jose and the Sharks organization should obviously be more than pleased that you're the ambassador to this franchise, because I know Patrick Marleau is considered Mr. Shark, but you got to be right up there.
Well, that's a very nice compliment, and I have to say that I appreciate all Sharks fans, and I can tell you that with all the programs that we have to bring Sharks excitement to you, whether it's what we're doing or what these guys are doing or any of the stations, TV or radio, we like the fact that you love the team, that you're proud of San Jose, and that we carry that flag for everybody when we go out there on the road. And that's exactly what we intend to do, to make sure that I on the air, but also the guys on the ice, feel that they give an effort that all of you can be proud of. And that's something that I think is awfully important, a big part of what a hockey team brings to its community. And I'm looking forward to a lot of great games to tell you about, and I hope that you complete the picture with me.
And you know what? I believe that Dan Rusinowski is the original Mr. San Jose Shark, and now an inductee into the Hockey Hall of Fame. Dan, thank you so much. For Lowell Tuckerman, Ryan Leong, I've been Mark Yakovlevich. Thank you for watching Bay Area Sports Wrap.